For the last few years, television has been offering so-called reality shows. But this is not new. From nearly the beginning of the broadcast era, audiences have had a taste for seeing, and before that, hearing themselves. On today's Present at the Creation, Peter Sagal, host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, explores the origins of the quiz show.
Your first question, as per tradition, is an easy one. What is this?
The high card in a royal flush poker hand. Lee.
What is the ace?
Right.
That's right. It's a quiz show. An American invention, now an international phenomenon. You know, in Italy they play them naked, in Japan they make contestants eat coral or something. Now here's a tougher question. Whose idea was it, originally, that watching someone take a test could be entertainment? Anyone? John.
It was kind of a natural outgrowth of the man in the street interview shows like Vox Pop.
That's John Dunning, author of the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio. Vox Pop started as a local show in Houston that went national on the Blue Network. The idea was simple. Host Parks Johnson would take his microphone out into the streets or to county fairs and just ask people questions.
Several questions that I've been saving up to ask some lady. Where do you think woman's place is?
Well, I'm just old-fashioned enough to think a woman's place is in the home.
In the home?
Yes.
Do you know something about vitamins and calories and those
things?
Well,
I'm supposed to. I have two babies that kind of have.
Well,
to.
You certainly should know. But what do you think about
inevitably, somebody came up with the idea of adding money to the mix and making it a question show and taking it off the street. And that's how it came about. I think there were never big things expected for it.
According to John Dunning, the first true quiz show was Professor Quiz, a radio program that went on the air in 1936. After its success, everybody wanted to get in on the act.
I'm just guessing at this, but I think there was probably a good deal of, I could be doing that, you know, especially with shows like Pot of Gold, which was an enormous success, and it came about in 1938. It was actually not as much a quiz show as it was just a giveaway show. They just gave away money, and people would stay home. They wouldn't even go to the theaters at night on the 20 million to one shot that Pot of Gold would call them, you know.
A radio show called Dr. IQ took the idea one step further. They would shower money on people right there in the studio audience.
I have a gentleman, Doctor.
$12 for the answer to this one. In the popular comic strip The Timid Soul by H.T. Webster, what is the name of its principal character? The Timid Soul. No prompting, please.
Sorry, I can't think of it.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. I think you'd find it Casper Milk Toast, wouldn't you? But a box of Dr. IQ candy to that gentleman.
These early quiz shows were the radio equivalent of watching dolphins do tricks for pieces of herring, except balancing a ball in your nose was a lot harder than answering most of the questions. For producers, the main appeal of quiz shows was, and still is, that they're so cheap. Better to give some random Joe 15 silver dollars than pay a musician or an actor real money. Quiz shows were not, to put it mildly, highbrow entertainment. Not yet, anyway. Here's John Dunning.
Dan Golenpaul, who created Information Please, in fact, was listening to Professor Quiz when the idea occurred to him. You know, these quiz shows are basically stupid and inane. They take some hapless guy out of nowhere and they spotlight his ignorance. What if we had some very keen intellects and had the audience quiz the panel?
Golenpaul turned to 34-year-old Clifton Fadiman, the book critic for The New Yorker, to host his new show. Anne Fadiman is Clifton's daughter.
I think he thought it was going to be great fun, especially when it was explained what kind of panelists were going to be on the show and how the entire structure of the show was going to upend the conventional quiz show, because it didn't matter if you got it right. The important thing was to have a witty conversation. The normal quiz show structure was turned upside down. That is, instead of experts making up the questions and ordinary people answering, ordinary people were to send in the questions and famous people were to answer them. And it was the askers who got the prize, $10 and a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Get 3 out of 4 on this. This is a literary question. Name the work of literature in which the heroine, who is named Catherine, is nicknamed in these various ways. In the first case, she's nicknamed Kathy. What literary work, Mr. Levant?
In Wuthering Heights.
In Wuthering Heights, that's quite right. What's her whole name?
Well, that's Sam Goldwyn. He produced it.
All right, we'll send a note to Sam Gold. You don't ever bother to know the last names of any of the girls on this program.
I don't have time, frankly.
Catherine Earnshaw.
Information Please, hosted by Clifton Fadiman, ran for 10 years, from 1938 to 1948. John Kieran, who along with Oscar Levant and Franklin P. Adams was one of the regular panelists on the show, called it, quote, the most literate popular entertainment program ever to go out over the air on radio or television. Chances are, when somebody over 60 sniffs at the quality of quiz shows today, or pretty much the quality of anything on the airwaves, they're comparing it to Information Please. But there are some quiz shows with a very different sort of appeal.
Team, in that round, you banked a miserable, depressing, pathetic $7,500.
Whoever thought that an audience wouldn't just want to be tested, but that it would enjoy being mocked?
The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho, sorry, my name's Yasmin Khan.
Even after the success of Information Please, hosting a quiz show seemed like an awful comedown for someone once known as the world's funniest man. Plus, as any of the Hollywood writers who used to drive berserk could tell you, Groucho Marx read other people's scripts with all the panache and style of a courtroom reporter. Here's radio historian John Dunning.
Groucho had been on radio four or five times and had failed at everything. And John Goodell got this idea when the story goes that Groucho and Bob Hope were on another show, and Hope dropped his script, and Groucho reached over and put his foot on it. And the two of them then got into this furious ad-libbing contest, and Goodell thought they were great, and he just thought, if I could do a quiz program that would highlight Groucho's ability to be clever, I just don't see how it could miss.
Groucho said what he wanted to whomever he wanted, and a surprising amount of that material made the air. In fact, it was Groucho's improvising, usually at the expense of his contestants, that made You Bet Your Life perhaps the most famous and influential quiz show ever.
And Jersey Bounce, tell me, where do you work?
I work at the Roseland Roof, 833 South Spring Street.
Mm-hmm. And what is Roseland Roof?
It is the finest taxi dance hall in the United States.
I didn't know taxis could dance. Huh?
We have some two-legged taxis that dance very well, sir. Some night if you're off and you have a moment to spare...
I'm off every night, huh?
The rules of You Bet Your Life were ridiculously simple. Teams of contestants picked from the studio audience and the simple criteria of how much fun Groucho could have with them competed against each other in answering questions. The winner got a few $100 in prize money and a chance at the jackpot, which could be as much as $3,000. And of course, if you said the magic word, a duck came down from the rafters and you won $50.
Wait a minute, you said foot.
Groucho could have told you, as could Clifton Fadiman, that in a successful quiz show, the least important part is the quiz. The producers of 21 and the other shows involved in the great quiz show scandals of the late 50s would have agreed. People didn't care if the games were fair, really. They just wanted to see people like them, take the challenge. Match wits with the panel, trade quips with the host, pick between door number one and door number three, be the star of a daily or weekly drama whose thrilling conclusion is victory, or going home with some linoleum. Quiz shows are machines that make Cinderellas, with the raw material being you. Because even if you don't know the answer to the question, hey, that was you on the radio. For NPR News, I'm Peter Sagal.